You are listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, a show about... Wait, did I read that right? Repartee? Was that an autocorrect? I assume it's the Minnesota Progressive Report.
No, you read that correct, and we have a special show today. We're speaking with a presidential candidate.
Okay, whatever. I guess it's the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Here are your hosts for Thursday, Hunter Hawes and Eric Nelson.
Yes, yes, yes. Here we are on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Hunter Hawes and Eric Nelson, and we have a very special show for you today. We're going to be speaking with two guests. Later in the show, at the bottom of the hour, we will be speaking with Shelley Elkington. She is an opioid awareness activist here to talk about Opioid Awareness Day at the Minnesota State Capitol. But joining us right now is a 2020 presidential candidate, Andrew Yang. Andrew, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me. And as you know, I'm coming your way next Tuesday, so hopefully we'll have a chance to meet in person soon.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, let's talk about that. Next Tuesday, you're going to be in Minneapolis. You'll be at the Gold Room at 528 Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis. This is at 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. And let's get started with what got you into the race? Because your background isn't in politics, but you're very driven and issue-focused. So why don't you talk about your background and why you felt this desire to get into this race and potentially go up against Donald Trump?
Of course, I'd be happy to. Just want to make a correction. I believe it's at 5 p.m. Central Time.
Okay.
That the event begins. It's 6 p.m. Eastern, since I think my team's based on the East Coast. But a bit about my background. As you said, I'm not a career politician. I'm a serial entrepreneur who helped create several thousand jobs around the country. And the reason I'm running for president is that I'm certain that Donald Trump's election was a direct result of the fact that we automated away 4 million manufacturing jobs in Iowa, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, all the swing states that Donald Trump needed to win and did win. And unfortunately, my friends in Silicon Valley know that what we did to the manufacturing workers, we are now doing to millions of American retail workers, call center workers, fast food workers, and pretty soon truck drivers, which will be disastrous for many communities around the country. So this is why Donald Trump is our president today. And I'm running for president to help solve for the fact that we are in the midst of the greatest economic transformation in the history of our country.
Now, your platform revolves around the issue of universal basic income and to give every American $1,000 a month, and you call it the freedom dividend. So why don't you explain your idea of universal basic income and also this concept as a dividend for all Americans?
Sure. So if you look at our history, this is a deeply American idea. Thomas Paine was for it. Martin Luther King, whose birthday we recently celebrated, was for it. 1,000 economists signed a letter saying it would be great for the economy and society when it passed the House of Representatives twice in 1971 under Richard Nixon. And one state has had a dividend now for 37 years where everyone in the state of Alaska gets between $1,000 and $2,000 a year, no questions asked. And so my plan, the freedom dividend, is that every American adult starting at age 18 will receive $1,000 a month, free and clear, to do whatever they want. And we would see this would strengthen families and communities. It would give kids a chance to learn. It would improve health and nutrition. It would improve mental health. It would decrease domestic violence. It would begin to recognize and compensate women for the vital work they do in homes and communities every single day. And this sort of move, while it seems dramatic, is increasingly necessary given that we are on the verge of automating away the most common jobs in the American economy. And anyone who thinks that is alarmist or futuristic, all you have to do is look around where 30% of American malls are closing in the next 4 years, and working in retail is still the most common job in our economy.
Yeah, that's very interesting you brought up malls, because actually last night me and Eric met at a mall nearby here that I used to go to a lot when I was younger, and half of the mall has closed down. It's turning into a ghost mall very quickly, But so we're seeing this in our everyday lives. Now, the concept, though, I mean, your critics are going to say it's a huge government program, but that idea of a dividend is distinctly different. Why don't you talk about that?
Sure. I mean, again, if you think about it, Alaska is a deep red state where people would consider themselves to be quite anti-government, and yet this dividend is wildly popular. It was passed by a Republican governor who asked the people in Alaska this question: who would you rather get the oil money, the government or you? And then the Alaskan said, us, please. And he said, I thought you'd say that. So as you suggest, the dividend is very, very distinct from a government program because it puts the economic resources into our hands. We are the owners and shareholders of this country, and we can easily afford a dividend of $1,000 per adult citizen.
Now, another plank of your platform is an evolution to the next stage of capitalism, human capitalism, geared towards optimizing around human well-being in addition to GDP. Kind of flesh this out, explain this idea to us.
Sure. So I like to use my wife and my family as an example, where my wife is at home with our two young boys, one of whom is autistic, and right now her work would count for zero in GDP and zero in the marketplace. And yet we know that the work she's doing is some of the most important work anyone can be doing and some of the most valuable. On the flip side, we have GDP that's going up and up, even as our malls close and our people are addicted to drugs, as your next guest is going to talk about, and our mental health is disintegrating. So we need new measurements for the 21st century. We invented GDP almost 100 years ago during the Great Depression, and even the inventor said it's a terrible measurement for national well-being. So as president, I will update GDP to a new measurement that includes childhood success rates, mental health and freedom from substance abuse, average income and affordability, environmental sustainability, the proportion of Americans who can retire in quality circumstances, measurements that would actually reflect how we are doing. And then that would end up creating a whole new set of opportunities for people who can drive our society forward in these important ways. And I'm going to suggest that if we cling to GDP, we're going to ride it straight off a cliff, because robot trucks will be great for GDP and terrible for many, many communities.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, our next guest, she actually lost a daughter to the opioid epidemic, and she's organizing to change how we combat opioids here in Minnesota. But do you see a connection to capitalism in its current state and the opioid epidemic we're currently facing in this country?
Oh, yeah, there's a direct relationship. And all you have to do is look at the genesis of the opiate crisis, which was Purdue Pharma issuing tens of millions of prescriptions around the country as a non-addictive wonder drug. And why did they do that? Because they could make $16 billion, and they had a fine of $500 million, which sounds like a lot until you realize that they got to keep $15.5 billion, and now that family is one of the richest families in the country, the Sackler family, and thank goodness they're now being sued by the Massachusetts Attorney General for the plague they've unleashed on our citizens. So anyone who's looking for the origins of the opiate crisis, you don't have to look further than our economic system that rewards profits over humanity and has completely let certain enterprises run amok. You can see it also in our approach now to helping address the crisis, where it's very, very costly because getting off of opiates is extraordinarily difficult, time-consuming, has an uneven success rate, and most people can't pay for treatment. To me, the federal government was asleep at the switch when they let Purdue Pharma issue these prescriptions in the first place. And as president, I will quintuple the level of resources available to people around the country and make non-addictive drug substitutes freely available to anyone who's struggling with addiction. Because this is a moral responsibility of the federal government because it allowed this crisis to happen in the first place.
We are speaking with presidential candidate Andrew Yang. You can find more about him on yang2020.com. Now, this is your campaign is kind of based on a new vision for how we organize society here in America. And I find it kind of fascinating that you choose terminology which work within our current capitalist system. to be more humane as opposed to any like classical leftist or socialist terminology. But how would America look under President Andrew Yang? Would it model like Nordic social democracies, or what are some examples we could look to in the real world?
Yeah, I think there are many lessons we can take from other countries and other parts of the world. I'm for Medicare for all, single-payer health care, and that's something that Northern European countries have adopted and implemented quite successfully. Our health care system right now is the worst of all worlds, where we're spending twice as much as other countries to worse results. And Americans are more stressed out about paying for treatment or navigating an incredibly opaque bureaucracy when they get sick or injured instead of focusing on getting well. So there are many lessons we can take from other countries. But the big misconception people have is that the freedom dividend, which is putting $1,000 in the month of every American adult, would create many more jobs and opportunities for work and would help our capitalist economy function much better. I'm the CEO, I'm a CEO and business person, and CEOs know that markets function better when consumers have money to spend.
Yes, definitely. Now, what would be the like immediate impacts of giving every American an extra $1,000 a month? Have you run numbers, or what have you found so far?
Yeah, well, the Roosevelt Institute did a study on what would happen, and what you'd see would be very, very dramatic in a country where 57% of us can't afford an unexpected $500 bill, and 78% are living paycheck to paycheck. There's a mindset of scarcity that is sweeping our country, and $1,000 a month would make an enormous difference to tens of millions of Americans right off the bat. But what you would see is you'd see our consumer economy would grow by about 8%. We would have 2 million or more new jobs around the country, because most of that money is going to go right back into our Main Street economies. It would go to car repairs, food and tutoring for your kids, the occasional night out, home repairs, managing health care expenses, and things that would stay right there in Minnesota and help grow the local economy. It would also, on a human level, it would increase graduation rates, physical health and nutrition, mental health. It would bring down domestic violence. It would bring down hospital visits. We'd become a stronger, healthier, more forward-thinking nation if people were getting $1,000 a month.
Now, a lot of this is centered around the threat that automation poses to the workforce. What are your predictions in how fast this is going to occur and when we will start seeing major ramifications from automation?
Well, and here's one of the things that really pushed me to act was that I did the research. I wrote a book called The War on Normal People, and I was shocked at the data, where if you look at it, it is no longer speculative. It is with us right now. We automated away 4 million manufacturing jobs since 2000, and that has driven hundreds of American communities into despair and disintegration. Our labor force participation rate right now, as we're talking, is 63%, a multi-decade low in the same levels as El Salvador and the Dominican Republic. Almost 1 in 5 prime working age men in America have not worked in the last 12 months. And suicides and drug overdoses have surged to a level where our life expectancy has declined for the last 3 years. All of these things are 100% consistent with what you'd expect to see if we were displacing a large amount of labor, particularly unskilled men. So it's with us right now. It got started already. We're in the third inning, and we need to wake up. But if you ask about the prospective impact of various innovations, the one I keep calling out to people is that there are 3.5 million truckers in this country. It's the most common job in 29 states. And so if you see self-driving cars and trucks coming down the pike, that would impact about 5 million people who drive vehicles for a living, most of whom are men with a high school degree, and an additional 5 million Americans who work in truck stops, motels, and diners that rely upon the trucker stopping every day. And this is the obvious innovation we can all see coming. There are dozens of inobvious innovations that will displace back office workers, accountants, attorneys, insurance agents, and on through the economy. I am friends with these CEOs. I speak to them regularly, and they tell me that they are right now looking at AI replacing thousands and thousands of American workers because that's what their incentives are. Their incentives are to make things work as efficiently as possible, and you don't have a choice if you're a CEO. You can't say, well, I'm not going to adopt software that can replace these 10,000 workers. It's what you have to do. That's the way our system is set up. That's why we have to evolve as fast as possible.
Now, I've been thrilled because I've seen your name included with all the other major Democratic candidates. I saw you on Colbert recently and on some of the news channels. They include your picture. But historically, it's been difficult for you're not a single issue candidate, but a non-political background candidate to get on the debate stage. Have you and your campaign worked this out? What are the struggles for you to appear at the debates, and what do you know so far about that?
Well, I'm happy to say that the DNC has already announced that they're going to have a very inclusive format. They're not going to separate it into, let's call it, like the JV and the rest of it. And so what we need is to just show that people want to hear our message and they want me on that stage. So anyone listening to this, if what I'm saying makes sense to you, go to yang2020.com and just follow us on social media, donate $5 or whatever you'd like. Our average donation is only $19, so I joke that our fans are cheaper than Bernie's were. But we can 100% make that debate stage because the format is tailor-made for someone like me, where they've already said they may even split the debate into two nights to accommodate a larger number of candidates. So the stage is there for the taking, but we could certainly use more people spreading the word to make sure it happens in June.
Absolutely. And now, I'm curious about your theory that the government should issue a new currency, the digital social credit, which you have – it can be converted into dollars and used to reward people and organizations who drive significant social value. Now, kind of flesh this out, explain this, and how it would look and impact everyday people.
Sure. So if you look at it, our current monetary market either undervalues or completely ignores – many of the things that we value most in society, things like caregiving and nurturing your children, volunteering, journalism increasingly, including the work you guys are doing, environmental sustainability, things that make people stronger, getting people off of drugs. You know, if you think about it, what is the monetary value of any of these things? Like if you go out and do these things, I started a nonprofit that I ran for 7 years, so I understand the mechanics. Now, what we should be doing is we should be finding ways to both measure and reward these kind of actions because they're exactly what we need more of, and they're exactly where we need to drive the economy. And so right now, most of the time you don't get paid for doing a lot of these things, which is in some ways as it should be. But if you're going to reward and reinforce something, then having some way to measure it is super helpful. And so to me, issuing a new currency that helps reward both people and organizations that are doing work in their communities makes perfect sense. And the goal would be to make it so that people who run nonprofits, as I have done, have a better way to both measure and reward their organizations and the people that support them.
Well, Andrew, we're running out of time here, but one, I would just like to say that I am thrilled you are in the race to be drawing attention to universal basic income. Here in Minnesota, we had a third party was the Grassroots Legalized Cannabis Party, and they successfully pushed the Minnesota DFL for all the statewide politicians to come out in favor of the legalization and expungement of records for marijuana. So just the fact that you're in the race is pushing Democrats to at least speak about this and get it into the public dialogue. So I'm thrilled. I will be there on Tuesday, but why don't you give all the details for people to find out more on your campaign and your appearance in Minneapolis next Tuesday.
Yes. So we'll be in Minneapolis at the Gold Room, which is on 528 Hennepin Avenue at 5 p.m. next Tuesday. the 29th. We'll be with One Minnesota and Brett Buckner. A lot of great people will be there, a lot of great progressives. So please do come on out, say hello. And if you want more information about me and the campaign, go to yang2020.com. You'll see that in addition to the Freedom Dividend, we have another 79 policies right there on the website, including legalization of marijuana, helping address the opiate crisis, and many other problems that we can do much, much better on. People need to see that we have the ability to rise to these challenges and we can solve these problems, but we don't have unlimited time because, unfortunately, we are years behind on many of them.
All right. It was a pleasure having you on, Andrew, and you're always welcome anytime you're coming to Minnesota or you'd just like to talk about universal basic income.
Thank you all. Appreciate the great work you do. Look forward to meeting you soon.
Yes. Take care. And we will be right back here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Phone number 952-946-6205. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Paul Metza from the Wall of Power Radio Hour. You are listening to my buddies Hunter, Doug, and Brett on Minnesota Progressive Repartee, broadcasting on AM 950 in the heart of Eden Prairie, which is neither Eden nor Prairie.
Moe's Tax Service, family-owned and operated since 1971, providing a full spectrum of tax preparation and associated services. Think about it. Why would you take your most important financial information to a franchise operation with a cheap basic package that goes up dramatically once you're in the door? You can find out all you need to know about Moe's by visiting www.moestax.com. That's M-O-H-S-Tax.com. Or call them at 612-721-2026. Don't be a blockhead. Go to the professionals at Moe's Tax Service.
Yay, you survived the holidays. Now what about cleaning up that holiday mess? My friends, it's time you learn my holiday hangover secret. It's Zero Res. Fortunately for you, right now is the best time of the year to call Zero Res. Get three rooms clean starting at just $119. And this month only get a hallway clean for free with their three-room special. Call 952-ZERO-RES or book online anytime at ZeroResMinnesota.com. Spell it backward or forward. It spells the same. Zero Res.
Crazy about pets? We are too. The Pet Connection Show is a great venue for fun, informative, and creative conversations about pets. Join myself, Kathy Menard, and Dr. Nicole Parole, along with guests who are leaders in the dynamic and growing pet industry, as we discuss healthcare, relationships, behaviors, and even political issues as they relate to our pets. So come, sit, stay for the Pet Connection Show, Sundays 11 a.m. to noon on AM 950 Radio, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Waking up is easy when you look forward to breakfast. Served 7 days a week at the Downtowner Woodfire Grill in St. Paul. Try eggs your way with hash browns, bacon, or sausage. There are four delicious varieties of Eggs Benedict that should not be missed. And buttermilk pancakes, waffles, or French toast are always fresh off the griddle. How about a Bloody Mary or screwdriver from the bar? The Downtowner Woodfire Grill is located at 253 West 7th Street with plenty of free parking. Or online at downtownerwoodfire.com.
Hi, Matt McNeil for Rudy Luther Toyota. You know I purchase my vehicles with Rudy Luther because I love my Toyota Sienna, but it's the extra things which make me a loyal Rudy Luther customer. A great example, the Luther Advantage Card. With every new and used vehicle purchased, you'll get 3 years of 10 cents off per gallon of gas at Holiday Station stores and $5 off the Works car washes. The Luther Advantage Cards keep you happy in your Rudy Luther vehicle. Find out more at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambliot from Chambliot Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office.
And I'm Rachel Chambliot. Did you know a lot of people are afraid of the dentist? You don't need to be afraid of my dad. He makes going to the dentist comfortable and even fun.
We don't care if you're a dental regular or haven't seen a dentist in years. We just want to make you comfortable and get you out of pain.
If you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Hi, this is Paul Metza from the Wall of Power Radio Hour. You are about to hear my buddies, the Cool Cats, Hunter, Doug, and Brett, the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Tune in and check those dudes out.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, Hunter Hawes and Eric Nelson here for your Thursday with the fellas. And actually, I have an announcement. If you are a fan of me, and Eric, you can get more of us. We are starting today a new podcast for AM 950 that will also air 7 p.m. on Saturdays. So you can tune in on Saturdays or catch it up. It'll be up later tonight. It'll be called the AM 950 podcast for right now. We got to figure out a name for it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Thinking Laughing Matters old spot.
Yes.
Which we might be announcing it here is no longer on the station anymore.
Yeah, you kind of broke the ice on that one. But yeah, unfortunately, Laughing Matters is no longer a show here. But we wish the best to Robert Burrill and welcome him back anytime. Big fan of him and his show. That had a long run, 7 years. Fabulous show. But also, upcoming news, the Blue State Ball is Saturday, March 2nd at the Blaisdell. And this is going to be a fantastic Blue State Ball. Tom Hartman's going to be there. All of us 950 personalities are going to be there. Gary from Minneapolis is going to be there, and we're going to dance with Gary. He's going to tell us dirty jokes. And me and Eric have some track suits to debut at the Blue State Ball. So get your tickets now at am950radio.com. It's going to be a lot of fun. And one more thing to note. Tonight at 7 p.m. is the Twin Cities Democratic Socialists of America Left Social Democrats Caucus meeting taking place at Barnes & Noble in Roseville. That's at the Harmar Shopping Center at 2100 Snelling Avenue North in Roseville. John Heppen, he's a regular on the show. He runs the caucus, but great way to get involved with DSA and learn more about social democracy and democratic socialism. But we are going to take another break, and when we return, we are going to be speaking with Shelley Elkington, an opioid awareness activist who is organizing Opioid Awareness Day at the state capitol next Wednesday. So we will be right back on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
This is Jennifer Ogren, account executive at AM 950, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
Hello, fellow AM 950 listeners. This is Jason from Nightingale at 26 in Lindale. Come experience our delicious signature dishes and exciting rotation of inventive seasonal fare for my wife and chef, Carrie, and her team. Nightingale is the perfect place to gather for any occasion with our extensive wine, beer, and cocktail selection, along with our dedication to great service. We offer a full menu every day from 4 to 1 a.m., two award-winning daily happy hours, and weekend brunch at 10. More at nightingalempls.com.
Hey, it's Hunter from the brand new 4 o'clock program, the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. And if there's one thing y'all know that I always look forward to, it's a good party. And I couldn't be more excited for the 2019 Blue State Ball. Finally, a chance to celebrate the work we did destroying Trump and the Republicans and keeping Minnesota the true blue state. But come celebrate our victory with fellow progressives, radio hosts, and politicians at the 2019 Blue State Ball, Saturday, March 2nd at the Blaisdell in Minneapolis. Tickets available now at am950radio.com.
Standard Heating is celebrating 89 years in business this January, but you get all the gifts, like saving $1,900 on a high-efficiency furnace and AC or boiler. In addition to providing year-round comfort for your family, you'll also enjoy lower energy bills. That's certainly worth celebrating. Learn how you can save $1,900 on your new furnace and AC or boiler, and other anniversary savings at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
Atheists Talk is the radio show for free-thinking Minnesotans. Listen on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock. Every Sunday, we bring you science, philosophy, politics, and plain old fun from an atheist's point of view. Visit our website at minnesotaatheists.org for more details. Tune in to Atheists Talk Radio Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's good radio without the good book.
Hi, this is Matt, owner of Green Home Doctors. Cold drafts in your home are a sign that your home is not properly insulated. Approximately 80% of the homes in our area are not sealed and insulated properly. A typical home has air leakage equal to a large open window. Green Home Doctors specializes in making your home comfortable, healthy, and energy efficient. Call today and take advantage of rebates from CenterPoint and Xcel Energy. To learn more about the savings, visit greenhomedr.com.
Hi, this is Matt McNeil, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repeat Stop right here on AM 950.
Yes, it's the Minnesota Progressive Repartee with Hunter Hawes and Eric Nelson here with you every Thursday. And if you're a frequent listener of the Repartee, you'll know one of the most crucial issues to me is combating the opioid epidemic. I personally have lost several friends now to it, including one of my best friends just a couple of weeks ago. So joining us today is Shelley Elkington. She's an opioid awareness activist and one of the organizers for Opioid Awareness Day at the State Capitol taking place next Wednesday. Shelley, it's a pleasure to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me, Hunter, and I'm so sorry to hear about the loss of your friend.
Yeah, it's so difficult and so widespread. It's really kicked me that I have to do something about this. I talked with a lot of politicians last year and asked them about it, about the opioid epidemic, and I realized how poor of answers most of them had. So I have a mic, and I'm going to use it for this issue. So I'm glad to have you.
Thank you.
And everything that you are doing. But let's start with your story. I mean, you didn't choose to become an opioid awareness activist. It kind of hit you, and you've led since your family's incident. But speak about what's happened to your family and your loss.
Sure. I certainly didn't choose this. It definitely chose me. And I don't really know how that happened either. I think after losing Casey and watching somebody you really love and care about, you know, be addicted to opioids is nearly as hard as losing them to it. The life she lived before she died was crushing and difficult and hard and uncertain, and we had so much fear. So I think after losing her, I just thought she just deserved so much more. She was a bright-eyed, talented, beautiful college student who died at 26 years old, and it was so unnecessary. And you know, I'm out here in Montevideo. I don't know where that is. So I'm about 125 miles west of Minneapolis. But, you know, we really didn't have a lot of that happening out here. So I think I was pretty unaware of it and, frankly, a bit naive until it hit us square in the face. And then I just thought, you know, if we can help, if we can do one thing to try and create some awareness and save a life, our loss will sting a little bit less. But in the 3 years since we've lost Casey, we've been to the Capitol a lot, and I've heard a lot of those same things from the legislators, too. You described it perfectly.
And so Casey, like many, she was legally prescribed opioids and kind of to a severe degree, I believe. But then it led her to a more of a sketchy crowd of people, I'd say.
Sure. So, and that's what happens. You know, she's taking prescribed opioids. She had Crohn's disease, so she had a lot of pain and a lot of surgeries that led to a painful recovery. And that frankly was the way her doctor was told to treat her. I don't really hold any ill feelings towards him. That's what he was taught to do via the pharmaceutical companies. And so he did, but it did after a certain period of time. She was on them about 2 years. I will tell you, she ran into some very nefarious folks.
Yeah, and that's something that not always that connection is made, but a lot of these people, they're exposed initially through doctors or just the overprescription where people they know have extra pills. And then because of the stigma of opioid addiction, or the word heroin, you come in the counter with some more shady characters than you normally would. And so since Casey's passing, what has been your experience? What have you worked on? I know you've done a lot of lobbying and advocacy at the Capitol for specific bills that have not yet passed. But what's been the history the past 3 years?
Sure. I'm surprised. I'll be honest with you. We were down there for the last 2 years, specifically our last session, I should say, and we had a really difficult time in the House. And, you know, I really, maybe it's just me being politically naive, but maybe I thought this was a no-brainer. Like, who doesn't want pharmaceutical companies to be accountable for the disaster they've created? I mean, who doesn't think that's not a great idea? Why should taxpayers pay millions of dollars in our state alone for an epidemic that they systematically created? So I'm down at the Capitol and I'm talking to people, and you know, even my own representative didn't buy into it. He said to me, "Well, I don't think it's our job to punish pharmaceutical companies. Where do we? What's next? Cell phones?" was one of the last things he said to me, and I said, "Yes, yeah, it is your job. That's why we elected you." So I found a lot of mindsets that really were difficult for them to wrap around this whole concept.
Yeah, and so in this session, there's going to be kind of a continuation of the bills they tried to pass in the past, but there's more to it. Do you know any of the specifics? Because I know they haven't released it yet. I went to this forum with four of the leaders in the House and Senate on this, and they briefly touched on it. But do you know any more about this year's bill?
I can probably give you a little insight. Both Senator Rosen, who's a Republican in the Senate, and Representative Liz Olson, a Democrat in the House, will be dropping bills that are in line with the opioid stewardship fees that we had last year. Now, this is a new session that we get to create new bills, so everything's new. I personally haven't seen the bill that Senator Rosen is going to drop in the Senate. I have not seen a bill in the House. However, I've seen the one last year, and it looks really similar. So I would expect that you'll see something Monday, particularly out of the House.
Great. And that is perfect timing for Opioid Awareness Day at the Capitol next Wednesday, January 30th. It starts at 12 p.m. Why don't you give us a little rundown of what to expect at Opioid Awareness Day?
Great. We encourage anybody who's been impacted by this epidemic to come by. If you've lost friends, family members, if you have current people in your lives that are addicted, come to the Capitol and see what we're doing. We're going to have some legislators there. We have some great speakers. A nationally recognized speaker named Ryan Hampton is coming in from California. He wrote a book called The American Fix. He's fascinating. Prince's cousin will be speaking, and we're excited about that connection. Our state idol, Prince, died because of opioids, and we need to recognize that. So we're grateful for their voice. We have some great representation from the Native American community that will be speaking. We'll have a hearing on the bill in the House that day as well. So we're excited to take this and get it done, because I really think in the House we'll get it passed. As you know, we had some changes in leadership.
Yeah, and I seriously encourage all of our listeners who can to attend next Wednesday, because what I've learned about this is federally, really what they're going to do is the only way they're going to combat this is to potentially give money to the states. So it's going to be the states that are going to have to lead on this issue. And if there's any state ready to lead on it, it's Minnesota. I mean, we're the treatment capital of the country, the recovery capital, and just a progressive state in general. So,
yeah, and some great stuff coming out that these funds coming through the pharmaceutical licensing fees will really create some great harm reduction tools, some medically assisted treatment options for people that haven't been widely available, and just give us some really tremendous resources on top of the really great resources we have. This is fantastic, and it'll be nationally recognized when it happens, and who better to have that than Minnesota?
But it is still an uphill battle for us, because, like we said, this hasn't passed the past few years, and these representatives and senators need a push. So it's something that all of us need to call our local reps and say to pass this bill. And on Monday,
you do. we're competing against lobbyists, and mm-hmm. there was a tsunami of lobbyists, and there will be even more this session. We're well prepared, but I'll tell you, they're tough, Hunter. They're tough, and we need everybody's support. Call your reps. Tell them you really want them to support these bills.
Now, there is going to be a committee hearing, correct, on Wednesday?
That's right, in the House.
So attendees of the Opioid Awareness Day, they'll gather in the rotunda, but then at 2:30, I believe, at the House mm-hmm. Health and Human Services, they have a committee hearing. And this is about the bill that is being introduced, or is it something else?
Yeah. Nope, this will be about the bill. You should see the bill become public on Monday, and then the hearing will be on Wednesday. And that will be, I believe, Representative Olson is the chief author of that bill.
Now, you are on the board of the organization who is putting this together, mm-hmm. the Steve Rundler Hope Network. Why don't you explain the organization a bit?
Yes, they have done a fantastic job, and I really want to give a shout-out to all the folks at the Steve Rundler Hope Network. If you're not familiar with who they are saving lives every day. They're pushing out naloxone in the streets and the people who need them, educating people in jails and in schools and everywhere across the state every day, and they are really trying to make a lot of change. So, again, hats off to the folks at the Steve Rundler Hope Network for sponsoring this event and putting it together.
Now, if people can't attend next Wednesday, what are your recommendations for people who want to help the cause?
Oh, call or write and email your representatives. I can't push that enough. They will listen to you. They are elected by you. And I think we lose sight of that. It seems like we have elections and there's a lot of fervor around that, and then it dies down. Please keep in mind, they work for you. This has they do want to hear from constituents on how you feel, and if you tell them that you want them to support this, they will. They will. They will listen to who votes for them. So please do that. And just keep following us on the Steve Rundler Hope Network Facebook page. We'll keep everybody updated on where the bills are at. There's a couple other great opioid bills being introduced. I haven't got knowledge of them quite yet, but you'll see some things in the next few days on them.
And supporters are encouraged to wear orange. What is the significance of the color orange?
Well, they can wear orange, purple. Orange and purple are the colors of the Steve Rundler Hope Network. I'll tell you what, we're wearing black at the Capitol. We're going to really try to honor those who have died. It seems like, you know, I hate to say that there's so many, but when 47,000 Americans die in a year and almost 450-500 Minnesotans die last year, we need to honor them. So we're going to have a vigil feel to this and a moment of silence, and we're going to really, really recognize those that have paid the ultimate sacrifice for this, you know, epidemic. They've been caught in the scourge of pharmaceutical greed, and we're going to honor those folks there.
Yeah, well, my head went that orange is really loud color, but it's also the color of pill bottles and syringe caps.
Yeah.
So it was
good
a very
point.
Fitting color.
Good point. I like that. I like it. You know, it really, we need to let the lawmakers in those buildings know we're there.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And really connecting that is ideal.
All right. We are just about out of time. Why don't you sure. give a shout out to Opioid Awareness Day, give the details again, and anything else you'd like to plug.
Great. Opioid Awareness Day is on Wednesday, January 30th. Gather in the rotunda about 1 o'clock. We're going to start speaking. You'll hear from Prince's family, Charles Smith. You'll hear from Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. We're going to hear from Ryan Hampton, the author. Myself will be there, some folks from our communities in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And we just need you there to show your support and get these bills passed. Save some lives.
Yes. Thank you so much, Shelley, for joining us today. And I will see you on Wednesday. I'm looking forward
wait.
To it. Yes, absolutely. We are going to take a break. Our phone number is 952-946-6205. Give us a call and we'll be right back on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
You are listening to the 4 o'clock repartee, which kind of like means conversation between people or something. Repartee, repertoire, repertoire, something like that.
Tom Hartman here telling you that solar energy isn't just for environmentalists. Switching to all-energy solar is actually perfect for reducing your carbon footprint while also saving money on your monthly electric bill. The fact that solar panels cause no earth-harming emissions while it's producing energy is a bonus. Who in the world could object to that? But they can also help you save money month after month for decades. And they do it with a clean footprint. So go green and start saving money today by visiting allenergysolar.com.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 Radio on Monday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. Our show this week is about idealists who unify. I'll talk about Larry Itlion, who helped unify California's Filipino farm workers in the mid-1960s with Cesar Chavez's Latino farm workers. The big interview will be with Brad Hart, the idealistic mayor of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Ellie 2.0 Radio, engaging and real on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067.
Get out at Array.
Not the insurance companies.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. Even though Auto Technical is a small nonprofit, we have helped more families with transportation than any organization in Minnesota. Since 94, we have reconditioned donated vehicles so they have a higher tax benefit. Call Richard at 612-919-5526. 612-919-5526 or autotech.org.
Hi, this is Candy from Green Tea Conversations, Sunday at 10 a.m., and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Hunter Hawes and Eric Nelson here with you every Thursday on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Hey, hey, hey.
Our phone number is 952-946-6205. Give us a call with anything you'd like to talk about. And also like to note that we will be recording a new AM 950 podcast right after this show today, and then we'll have it up later. We'll have a Facebook live stream if you want to stay tuned in to us. But it'll also air Saturdays at 7 p.m. So you can get more of the fellas every Saturday at 7 p.m. But, Eric, I thought it was interesting yesterday when we went to the Burnsville Center, and half of the mall is now vacant, and this is common. And it led me to think, what are these malls going to become? My initial hunch is that they're just going to become giant Amazon distribution centers and just giant malls of Amazon just to ship things out. But that's what I really like that Andrew Yang, 2020 Democratic presidential candidate, alluded to that, and for one of his reasons for the need for universal basic income here in America. But we got a couple phone callers on the line, so let's go to one of my favorites, Gary in Minneapolis. Gary, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, I had a great doctor about 30 years ago, and he told me something. He told others that, too, and maybe that's why he ended up with a lawsuit against them. You know, they're political a lot of the time. That in the European countries, they have transparency in pricing. 10 to 15% markups is all they're allowed on pharmaceuticals, and then they're told in a kind of a nice way, you do a certain amount of research, and at the time, first Bush was president, he says he goes over there and gets the research they do in the chemical giants in Germany and even Sweden, grabs the drugs they do with their research, and then he takes credit for the research over here. And here they mark the prices way up over here, so that's what we're dealing with over here. It's just something's got to be done with these profiteers.
Yeah, absolutely, and always a pleasure to have you, Gary. Thank you for the call.
That's the beauty of collective bargaining.
Yeah, absolutely. Now let's go to Stephen in Shakopee. He wants to talk about the shutdown. Stephen? Stephen, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead.
Yes, it's David in Shakopee.
Oh, actually. David.
No problem. But there's several articles out today, especially the one at Atlantic, that's talking about how the FBI is getting hurt by the shutdown, how this is hurting our security. It's going to take years for us to recover from the damage that this is doing to our national security. I want everybody to remember that this is what the Republicans did to our embassies. And then when Benghazi happened, they pointed fingers at everyone but themselves. They cut funding, our security got hurt, and then people got hurt. And that's here. Don't forget, when they start screaming the same way they screamed about Benghazi a couple years down the road, and people start going, hey, why weren't you protecting us? Remember, it was hurt right here, right now.
All right. Thank you for the call, David. And, yeah, I mean, this shutdown, there's no really end in sight. Eric, what do you think it's going to take to end this at this point?
No, I was talking with you before this, and I was saying, I don't know if there's anything that can be done besides build the wall to make Trump stop.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He seems to be willing to send the entire country into a nosedive if gets him what he wants.
Yeah. I know it seems that way because the Democrats have, I believe, even offered to do the $5 billion as long as none of it goes to a border wall, if it went to border security, and he wouldn't budge on that. So, I mean,
it's clearly like just a symbol for him that he's latched onto.
Yeah, why didn't he try but when he had the House? This was like a last-second half-court shot.
Yeah, I think it was one of those things that, like, he always returned to when
mm-hmm.
he was struggling to think of something or, like, have a message. It
yep.
always worked for him. So the wall is kind of the last thing he has left to hold on to.
And, I mean, it's going to be interesting over the next few weeks because right now there's no end in sight. So all these things are going to start falling apart, the TSA and all these government programs. And it's,
yeah. I mean, I think the most likely thing is he declares a state of emergency.
To build the wall?
Yeah. I honestly think that's going to happen.
And I don't think that will hold up in court. But that's all we have for today. Tune in on Facebook if you want some post-game with the fellas. But we're out for today.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. This is the end of our program, or the Departee. You can listen to our show anytime at am950radio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.